I'm sure that some of you will have been watching the BBC Breakfast News programme on Friday morning. In case you weren't, the programme closed with an amazing flypast by both American and British Air Force planes. This flypast was the dream of an 82-year-old man called Tony Folds, who, as an 8-year-old child, had witnessed a B-17 Flying Fortress crash, killing the 10 US airmen who had been on board. Following the crash, Mr. Folds had learned that the aeroplane had been attempting to crash land in the park where he and his friends had been playing. The park had been the only green space for miles. The pilot of the plane, and the plane was known as the Mi Amigo, had seen that there were children playing and he diverted course to avoid them. Tony Folds remembers seeing the pilot waving at him. Little did he know that day that the pilot was not waving at him, but instead encouraging the children to move to safety. It was in the days that followed that Tony was to realise the sacrifice that the airmen had made that day. Friday, the 22nd of February 2019, marked the 75th anniversary of the crash of the Mi Amigo. People from all over Sheffield, across the United Kingdom, and from across the world gathered in a playing field in Sheffield, in the park where Tony Folds had been playing, around the memorial that had been built in memory of the men who were on board the Mi Amigo. The memorial itself has been tended carefully by Tony Folds since its being built in 1944. It was the BBC presenter Dan Walker who discovered the story while he was walking his dog in the park, and he met Tony Folds in January as he was attending to the memorial. They struck up a conversation, and during their chat, Dan discovered that Tony had a dream where he hoped that the airmen could be properly commemorated with a flypast. Since that meeting, Dan has encouraged Tony to tell his story and also made contact with the American consulate. And with the help of many others, Tony's dream became a reality. For those who were in Sheffield, I would imagine that the flypast was an absolutely amazing sight. For anyone who's been at an air show, they are spectacular. They're noisy, but they're spectacular. And this was a unique opportunity to see some of the American planes that are not usually seen at British air shows. So Tony Folds and the people of Sheffield had a spectacular sight. Can you tell that my husband probably works in a scenario where I end up going to air shows? However, what made the broadcast poignant and full of emotion on Friday wasn't the planes. It was listening to Tony Folds talk about the guilt that he's carried throughout his life because of the events on the 22nd of February 1944. Although only a child, he had felt in some way responsible for the death of these young American servicemen. By having his dream come to fruition, he finally felt he'd been able to offer a tribute they so richly deserved. For Tony, Friday was a moment of reconciliation and forgiveness with those he had never met and yet contributed so much to his life, a lifting of the guilt that he carried. At 8:50 on Friday morning, I was in tears sitting, listening to Tony, not the flypast, to Tony. Our readings today do not specifically focus on the individual, but instead consider love, reconciliation and forgiveness within the community of faith. However, it would be difficult not to acknowledge the individual response found within that community experience that's given specifically of Jesus. It is, after all, in the Luke passage that we discover the golden rule, the rule found in verse 31. Do you to others as you would have them do to you. But let's begin with the story of Joseph found in Genesis this morning. As always, we drop into our story for only a portion of its telling. Those who know the story of Joseph know that it's really the story of Jacob and his sons. Joseph's story begins with him as the favourite son of Jacob, a child who has dramatic and ambitious dreams about his future. At the beginning of his story, we find that he and his brothers don't get on. In fact, most of his brothers wish him dead. In an earlier chapter, it's his eldest brother, Judah, who prevents his death. He instead suggests that Joseph should be thrown into a pit until some Ishmaelite merchants happen to be passing by. And Joseph's sold to them, and they in turn sell him to the Egyptians. What the brothers do not know and will not know until we meet them this morning is that the power that Joseph had envisaged in his dreams would become a reality. This morning we meet brothers who at first did not recognise their sibling, and when they do, they're full of fear of what he might do in retaliation for their betrayal of him. What they don't know is Joseph's heart's already been moved to compassion because of their willingness to die for their younger brother Benjamin. Just before the bit we've heard, Joseph's naughty and he puts some silver in the bag of food that he has sent them away with, and then he sends the guards to arrest them because somebody has stolen from them, and they rediscover the silver and Benjamin looks like it's him that will be put to death for stealing, and the brothers rush forward and say, "Don't do it, take all of us." Joseph recognises something new about them. They're no longer those who would sacrifice one for their own well-being. Instead, they now recognise the value of the small community their family represents. That value is found only when each member realises the interdependence of a community. So in the story of Joseph, we discover that there are four elements to community reconciliation. Firstly, we learn that reconciliation is possible even in the worst of circumstances. We might not always agree with that. That's quite a bold statement, but we might not always agree with that. Then we learn that it involves facing the truth. At times that's painful. It's worth hearing that Joseph tells his brother twice of the story of the past. But it's also worth knowing that he tells his brothers on three occasions why that past will be important to the future. There's a nice, sweet push towards words from Jesus in the knowledge that the truth of the past and the present are important in reconciliation. Because it's Jesus that says, "You know the truth, and the truth will set you free." The third thing that we learn about reconciliation from Joseph is it requires action as well as words. Joseph's forgiveness of his brothers is seen as he invites them from their poverty and famine to share in the resources that he's accumulated for those living in Egypt. And finally, true reconciliation recognises God at the heart of the living out of faith. On at least two occasions, Joseph speaks to his brothers of his own recognition that it is God who used grace and love to prepare a future for the people of Israel in a time of famine. It's stories like the story of Jacob and his sons, like the story of Sarah and Hagar, and in fact many of the Old Testament stories where we see fractious nature between siblings or wives and husbands that represent the broken communities into which Jesus is speaking. The gospel story takes us back to Jesus speaking to people on the plain or on a level ground. We should notice the significance of the level ground. It's a metaphorical description of the levelling of all people in the presence of God. The words that Jesus speaks of love of enemies are words that are easily said, but all the more difficult to live. In her commentary on the passage, Caroline Lewis notices that we would all like to think that we can do these things. But the truth is, we can't. Reading through the list of how we should behave as a community, we pass over those quickly that we think, well, that's not me. But we stumble and we pause when we recognise that some of those moments of love are the moments that we have failed to live. Of course, the ethic of Jesus is not just an individual ethic, but community ethic, inspiring us to live in awareness of our wider communities. The community in which the Gospel of Luke was being formed may well have been struggling with how to be the followers of Jesus in the midst of oppression and discrimination, yet it carries many of the burdens we ourselves face today. The American pastor Bernice King, who happens to be the daughter of Martin Luther King Jr., recently tweeted, "Jesus didn't call it social justice, he simply called it love. If we would only love our neighbours beyond comfort, borders, race, religion, and other differences that we've allowed to be barriers, social justice would be a given. Love makes justice happen." Those words strike a chord. They're reminders that we can set up all kinds of groups, aim to reach out to those beyond this building, hope to support each other through our joys and our sorrows. But each of these things needs to be rooted in love, and the kind of love that seeks forgiveness and reconciliation. Perhaps Rowan Williams brings this sermon to an end by saying, forgiveness, and I would add a willingness to be reconciled. Forgiveness is one of the most radical ways in which we're able to nourish one another's humanity. To forgive and to be forgiven is to allow yourself to be humanised by those whom you may least want to receive signs of God's gift. A willingness to forgive is clearly the mark of humanity touched by God, free from anxiety about identity and safety, free to reach out into what is other, as God does in Jesus Christ. Amen.